This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself to see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This episode is brought to you by IQBar. Pretty much everyone I know struggles with their energy levels these days. But if you often find yourself flagging, the solution might be easier than you think. IQBar protein bars, IQ Mix hydration mixes, and IQ Joe mushroom coffees are the delicious low-sugar brain and body fuel that you need to win your day. We got the ultimate sampler pack, and let me tell you, it disappeared in days. Especially the IQ Mix Zero Sugar Drink Mix sachets. They hydrate you with electrolytes, improve your mood, and boost your mental clarity. All IQ Bar products are packed with clean, delicious ingredients that keep you physically and mentally fit, like magnesium, lion's mane, and more. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, including the Ultimate Sampler Pack, plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text redhanded to 64,000. Text redhanded to 64,000. That's redhanded to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to an episode of Shorthand that I really, sincerely hope doesn't have a pedo in it, but I'm not entirely sure because I am not a Ricardian. I hold my hands up.
Yeah.
Richard III is not my area of expertise.
Nor mine. Definitely some dead or at least missing kids. Don't know if anyone touched them.
I would say they're dead now. Mm. Almost certainly.
Mm. Oh, yes. For sure. Cut down in their youth? Possibly. Let's find out.
Are they still in the tower?
I didn't even know that was a possibility.
Find out. That's where... Which tower did you think they're in?
Eh?
It's called The Prince is in the Tower.
Yeah, but I thought they vanished from there.
I think they're still in there.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about it.
In the summer of 1483, two young royal brothers went into the Tower of London and were never officially seen again. Legend has it that they were callously murdered by their uncle, the dastardly Richard III, who sawed at his own family tree to secure his spot on the throne. But some historians believe a very different story, that the princes survived and even went on to challenge the Tudor rule that followed their uncle's brief and inglorious reign. Was King Richard III really the moustache-twirling villain history and Shakespeare painted him to be? And with the discovery of suspicious boy-shaped bones years later, could modern science give us the answers historians have been seeking for centuries? On the blood-soaked battlefield of the War of the Roses, the truth is never as clear-cut as it might seem. This is the mysterious and medieval shorthand.
The tale of the princes in the tower is one of the biggest he said, she said mysteries in English history. So we're going to start with what we know for sure. We've all heard about the War of the Roses, a decade-long beef between the noble houses of York and Lancaster. Loads of people died, it went on for fucking ages. If you've seen Game of Thrones, you basically get the picture. Well, our story starts nearish to the end of this tumultuous period. In 1461, the first ever Yorkist king, Edward IV, rose to the throne after deposing Henry VI. And the House of York was absolutely buzzing to finally have a go at the reins. And Edward IV was taking no chances when it came to securing his royal legacy. He married and had 10 kids with a woman called Elizabeth Woodville. Now, most of the Yorkist elites weren't exactly big fans of Elizabeth, since she was a Lancastrian widow whose family was seen as shameless social climbers who'd switch sides just to get ahead. And it wouldn't actually be the last time they did this, but we'll get to that later. Elizabeth gave Edward IV two surviving male heirs, the princes Edward and Richard. In medieval times, there are only about five names that you can give anybody. And also, you're considered an adult once you turn 14.
And I actually did watch the series The White Queen. Because everyone knows, love the Tudors. But The White Queen is like a TV series. It's on Channel 4 now if you're in the UK. Starring Rebecca Ferguson from Dune as Elizabeth Woodville. And it's very good.
Okay.
It's not totally accurate, but it is very fun. In a bodice-ripping kind of way.
I've just got to the point now where I'm like, were you there? No, you weren't, so you don't know, do you? History's written by paedophiles.
And also Philippa Gregory, who writes all of the bodice-ripping. She basically takes... And look, I'm not taking away from that, but Philippa Gregory is not a historian. Philippa Gregory is a woman who is a very good novelist, and she basically takes, like, the loose plot of, like, an Anne Boleyn or an Elizabeth Woodville character, and then she writes very saucy novels based on it, and then they get turned into TV stories.
And then everyone thinks it really happened.
And then everyone thinks that's what actually happened. And look, I watched The White Queen. It's very compelling, but there's lots of mistakes in it. But Philippa Gregory, I assume, isn't pretending she is a historian. She's like, I'm a novelist. But she's also like, yum, 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 Channel 4 money. And Channel 4 are like, yum, 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 viewers.
I mean, that's why they have to put dragons in Game of Thrones. So people are like, oh, not actually something that happened. Also, you were considered an adult once you were 14 in the olden times, medieval times, because of the Catholic Church. That's when you become an adult. That's when you're confirmed, when you're 14.
Okay.
13, 14. So rather inconveniently for everyone involved, Edward IV unexpectedly popped his clogs after a short illness in April 1483, when his heir Edward was only 12. Facing his kingly duties a few years earlier than planned, the future Edward V was going to need wise advisors around him to steady the ship. It's not like they turn 14 and then they have no advisors, by the way.
No.
It's not really that different to what would have happened 2 years later. In the notoriously dog-eat-dog world of medieval politics, finding people who were selflessly interested in looking out for a small boy with not a political motivation of their own.
A small boy who's going to be King of England.
Sure, sure, sure. In his will, the late king named his younger brother, Richard, then the Duke of Gloucester, as Lord Protectorate to help his son rule when the time came. Something his mum's side of the family, the Woodvilles, weren't ecstatic about. Little Edward had been raised in a draughty Staffordshire castle under the tutelage of his maternal uncle, Anthony Woodville, who would become pretty much his only father figure. Now Edward was being sized up for the top job. Anthony Woodville was keen to stay by his side. Together with the royal council, the Woodvilles scrambled to find a way to prevent Richard from being the only one in charge of Edward. Possibly because they didn't approve of the idea of one person having so much power, and also probably because they wanted a slice of that pie for themselves. After ruling that Richard should not be Edward's only advisor, the council penciled in a hasty coronation date of the 4th of May to secure his proper ascension. But when he heard the rumours of people trying to muscle in on his protection of little Eddie from his castle in York, Richard was not having it.
On the 24th of April, Edward began travelling down to London with his uncle Anthony, only for Richard to intercept them in Buckinghamshire with an army of 6,000 men. The soon-to-be king spent an anxious night staying at a pub's lodgings while the grown-ups negotiated terms. Well, we say negotiated. The very next day, Richard had Anthony Woodville locked up and later ordered his execution. As with many things in this story, a lot of it comes down to a matter of opinion. Either Richard genuinely had Edward's best interests at heart and was suspicious of the scheming Woodvilles trying to pull the strings from behind the curtain, or he himself had more sinister motives for wanting Edward under his thumb. Or perhaps both. Either way, Richard took over his protectorate duties and escorted a likely traumatised Edward the rest of the way to the capital, and straight to the Tower of London.
Maybe you are thinking, the infamous Bloody Tower, home of countless imprisonments and executions, surely Edward's alarm bells would be ringing by now.
Well, actually, no, not really, because back then, the Tower was like a little mini town with shops, 15 pubs, a royal armory, a menagerie, and a grand royal palace. And also the prison.
Yeah.
Most castles have dungeons.
Yeah, it's you've just... got to. Where are you going to put them?
It was actually customary for future royals to spend their pre-coronation period in the Tower. But while an oblivious young Edward might not have felt anything amiss, tension was heating up between his warring rivals. His mum Elizabeth grew so fearful of her brother-in-law that she took the rest of her kids, including 9-year-old Richard, into a sanctuary at Westminster Abbey, assuring Elizabeth that he was definitely going to get Edward crowned. The older Richard eventually managed to coax her into letting him take little Richard. As I said, there's only four names. To join his brother in the Tower. And that would turn out to be her biggest mistake.
That summer of 1483, Richard kept pushing back Edward's coronation date. During this time, a visiting Italian scholar named Dominic Mantini reported on how witnesses saw Edward playing with his little brother in the Tower grounds, hoping to squeeze out one last drop of childhood before putting on that heavy crown. But his uncle Richard apparently had other plans. On the 22nd of June, a man named Reverend Shaw spoke at St. Paul's Cross, a famous open-air preaching spot, and quickly dropped a juicy bit of gossip to the crowd. The late King Edward IV had allegedly been legally contracted to another wife when he married Elizabeth Woodville. In other words, his bigamous relationship was therefore null and void, and their 10 kids? Yep, bastards, the lot of them. Including the two princes in the Tower. This changed everything.
Wedding season, officially, is here. And by now, our loyal listeners will know that we at Red Handed are committed to a very special brand for all of our shape, wear, needs, and that is Honey Love. And I honestly get asked about this by my friends more than anything else that we advertise. Do you need a strapless bra that won't let you down whilst you're cutting shapes on the dance floor? The perfect pair of seamless underwear to smooth you out and suck you in without making you sweat? Honey Love has got you covered, friends. My friends, your friends, everyone's friends. Their products are intelligently designed with bonding technology that provides support and comfort all at once. And I swear by their Cloud Embrace bra for everyday wear. It's the comfiest, wireless t-shirt bra that really does feel like a cloud against your skin. And it's a bestseller, so make sure you snap it up while you still can. Treat yourself to the most advanced bras and shapewear on the market. Use our exclusive link and save 20% off Honeylove at honeylove.com/redhanded. That's honeylove.com/redhanded. And after you check it out, they will ask you where you heard about them. So please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Experience the new standard in comfort and support with Honeylove.
My dad has lived a pretty crazy and interesting life. But honestly, you wouldn't know it. He can be pretty private. Sometimes all it takes, though, is a memory and he's off. So this Father's Day, I'm getting him an Aura frame. It's a digital photo frame that you can preload with unlimited photos. So you can tee up some of his best stories and make sure those memories don't just exist in his head. And Aura frames come with free unlimited storage, and you can preload as many photos and videos as you want before it even ships. So by the time he opens it on Father's Day, it's already chock full of memories. And if you download the free Aura app, you can share new photos and videos anytime. Named number one by Wirecutter, you can save now by visiting AuraFrames.com. For a limited time, listeners can get $35 off their best-selling Carver Matt frame with code REDHANDED. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code REDHANDED. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Summer always makes me rethink what I'm reaching for in my daily wardrobe. Lighter fabrics, better materials, pieces that just feel good the moment you put them on. And that's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on high-quality essentials, like breathable linen, soft organic cotton, washable silk, but without that luxury price tag. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middleman, so you're paying for quality instead of pointless brand markups. So the great news is that everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Their lightweight linen sets have been a lifesaver for me in these warmer months. And with prices from just $32 for 100% European linen, you honestly can't go wrong. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/redhanded for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/redhanded.
Taking the plunge with a new idea is always daunting. When we started Red Handed, I remember worrying, what if no one listens to us? But despite the fears and the what-ifs, it was all worth it. And it helped having a partner like Shopify on our side to help. Shopify is the e-commerce platform supporting household names like Heinz and Mattel, as well as brands just getting started. It's like having a built-in business partner, one that helps you manage your marketing, data analytics, and retail processes all seamlessly in one place. The iconic Shop Pay button is converting clicks to sales for millions of businesses worldwide, and yours could be next. It's time to turn those what-ifs into with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/redhanded. Go to shopify.com/redhanded. That's shopify.com/redhanded.
And we will give you three whole guesses as to where that particular rumour came from. Surprise, surprise, with his nephews conveniently booted out of the queue. Grown-up Richard was next in line for the Yorkist throne. And he was certainly wasting no time in taking it. On the 6th of July 1483, the former Duke of Gloucester was officially crowned King Richard III with a lavish coronation at Westminster Abbey.
Oh, you would be pissed if you were Elizabeth Woodville, wouldn't you? You'd be like, you've done your job to the fucking max. Like, your job at the time as a queen or as like a royal lady, get married, have kids.
Pop
have
them out.
As many kids as you can. She has 10 fucking kids. And then they're like, nah, they're all bastards. Oh my God, you'd be raging.
And as for the newly illegitimate princes, they stayed in the tower. At least at first. Mancini wrote that they were withdrawn into the inner apartments of the tower proper and day by day began to be seen more rarely behind the bars and windows until at length they ceased to appear altogether. By the autumn of 1483, both brothers had vanished. And to this day, nobody can state with any certainty what happened to them.
Still, two major theories prevail amongst historians. The first, and I have to say most widely believed theory, is that the boys were killed in the tower, with their murders most likely ordered by King Richard III himself. And it does make sense. You always have to look in a murder mystery who has the most to gain, right? And if Richard was ambitious enough to jump ahead in the line of succession, why would he risk leaving two little brats alive to challenge that position? That's just very inconvenient. Most accounts of Richard paint him as an ambitious, bloodthirsty, and unscrupulous leader, who basically killed anyone who stood in his way. Though, in this respect, he honestly wasn't all that different from other kings at the time, because in medieval England, ambition and violence went hand in bloody hand.
But even if he did swing the axe at his own nephews in pursuit of power, that wasn't actually enough for Richard to secure total control. His ill-gotten reign was brief and bloody, ending just 2 years later with his death at the Battle of Bosworth in 1485. My kingdom for a horse, it's that one. Henry Tudor took the throne as King Henry VII and united the houses of York and Lancaster by marrying Edward IV and Elizabeth Woodville's daughter, Elizabeth of York, and that is why the Tudor rose is red and white. And ironically enough, since he couldn't marry a bastard, Henry VII had to undo the proclamation his predecessor Richard had made and declare all of those Woodville kids legitimate after all.
Oh, phew.
So while he'd finally brought an end to the bloody War of the Roses, he actually risked leaving the door wide open to a future challenge from his new bride's brothers. If they were still alive, that is. Whilst Henry allegedly searched Richard III's properties and the Tower of London looking for the princes, just to make extra sure they weren't still hanging around and had just been missed somewhere, it stands to reason that even if they were still around after Richard III died, they wouldn't have manage to stay that way for very long, I don't think.
No. And you must have some knowledge that they are no longer around to do what he did and declare them all legitimate again.
Quite.
But logic and assumption aside, let's look at the anecdotal evidence for this theory. The biggest source comes from Thomas More, a court figure who famously served as Henry VIII's Lord Chancellor a few decades later. Or at least until Henry had his pious old head chopped off in 1535, when he refused to accept him as the new supreme head of the Church of England. While More was just a child himself when the princes in the Tower vanished, his book on Richard III seemed to imply insider knowledge to what went down. Writing in the 1510s, More described how a Yorkist knight named Sir James Tyrrell was executed in 1502 for another crime, but confessed before his death to the role he'd played in the younger prince's death. As one of Richard III's most loyal knights, Tyrrell claimed that Richard himself had ordered him to personally make sure his nephews did not live to see adulthood. Tyrrell hired assassins, Miles Forrest and John Dighton, to do his dirty work. And these men crept into the boys' bedchamber in the tower and smothered them in their beds. The account is incredibly detailed and chilling, describing how the hitmen suddenly lapped them up among the bedclothes, sober wrapped them and entangled them, keeping them down by force, the feather bed and pillows hard unto their mouths, until their breath failing, they gave up to God their innocent souls into the joy of heaven. Now, we have to say, obviously, Richard was in charge of Edward's security as his Lord Protectorate, so it's incredibly unlikely that anyone else could have got into the boys' inner chambers without Richard knowing about it. Or, as the case may well have been, without him ordering it himself. So if the boys were killed in the tower, it's almost certain that Richard was behind it.
More's account gave lurid details to what had been widely whispered about for decades. And in the following years, it basically became gospel. William Shakespeare used More as his main source to write Richard III in the 1590s, depicting the Yorkist king as a tyrannical villain who definitely, absolutely, totally killed his nephews. Calls him a bottled spider.
Mm.
But historians have questioned More's reliability as a non-contemporary source who had his own loyalties to the Tudor courts that followed Richard's brief reign. But in 2024, Professor Tim Thornton from the University of Huddersfield uncovered genuine evidence to back up his claims. Thomas More was found to be in close contact with the sons of the alleged assassins, and legacy documents indicate that a gold chain belonging to the doomed Prince Edward was passed down through the family of Sir James Tyrrell. And as More's sources came to life, it started to look a lot more credible.
But long before that, another discovery also seemed to support More's version of events. In 1674, nearly 200 years after the princes vanished, workmen excavating the tower found a box containing two sets of children's bones at the foot of an old suitcase. So you're right, Hannah. Are they still in there? And this box was found in the exact spot where Thomas More claimed that the boys were buried. Now, More did also say their remains were later moved to a, quote, better place. But still, the coincidence was enough to make people pretty bloody excited.
Interesting that nobody checked that exact spot in 200 years, though, isn't it?
Just have a look. Why not have a look?
There's quite a lot going on there, to be fair.
And we also have to say, the king at the time, Charles II, obviously thought the bones were the real deal. He had them interred with full pomp and ceremony in Westminster Abbey.
The bones remained untouched for over another 200 years until in 1933, King George V gave his permission to have them tested using cutting-edge new technology. The scientists found the ages of the victims to roughly fit a 12 and 9-year-old and pointed out evidence indicating suffocation. How the fuck they got that from some fucking 600-year-old bones?
I cannot. How could you know that? That's too much. I mean, if I'm going to give them any benefit of the doubt at all, it's like, okay, there's force applied to the face. Is there some sort of breakage that they can indicate there was like some sort of, you know, suffocation type death? But fuck me, that's a stretch.
The 1933 report has been widely criticised for falling victim to confirmation bias. The researchers just assumed the bones belonged to the princes. They didn't really examine them that much at all. The report even called the skeletons Edward and Richard from the second page onwards and quoted Shakespeare as the reason to believe that they were who
they claimed. Why would you quote Shakespeare? Quote Moore, at least. He's not even contemporaneous, but at least he is closer to when it actually happened than fucking Shakespeare.
Everyone had died in World War One. They were working with not very many people.
My dad has lived a pretty crazy and interesting life. But honestly, you wouldn't know it. He can be pretty private. Sometimes all it takes, though, is a memory, and he's off. So this Father's Day, I'm getting him an Aura frame. It's a digital photo frame that you can preload with unlimited photos. So you can tee up some of his best stories and make sure those memories don't just exist in his head. And Aura frames come with free unlimited storage, and you can preload as many photos and videos as you want before it even ships. So by the time he opens it on Father's Day, it's already chock full of memories. And if you download the free Aura app, you can share new photos and videos anytime. Named number one by Wirecutter, you can save now by visiting AuraFrames.com. For a limited time, listeners can get $35 off their best-selling Carver Matte frame with code REDHANDED. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code REDHANDED. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Summer always makes me rethink what I'm reaching for in my daily wardrobe. Lighter fabrics, better materials, pieces that just feel good the moment you put them on. And that's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on high-quality essentials, like breathable linen, soft organic cotton, washable silk, but without that luxury price tag. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middleman, so you're paying for quality instead of pointless brand markups. So the great news is that everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Their lightweight linen sets have been a lifesaver for me in these warmer months. And with prices from just $32 for 100% European linen, you honestly can't go wrong. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/redhanded for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/redhanded for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/redhanded. There wasn't even testing available back then to verify gender of said bones.
What?
And obviously it's 1933, they couldn't do DNA testing or carbon dating, so it's all just fucking nonsense. Anyway, the report left more questions than answers. We still can't conclusively say that the bones at Westminster Abbey are, in fact, the missing princes. Although I have questions about a lot of bones in Westminster Abbey actually being they're supposed to be.
And I was going to say, like, what testing to tell the sex of the bodies? But I guess, like, if they were 13 and 9, you could say, like, they're prepubescent, probably. So maybe they
more difficult to tell,
differentiated enough at that point. Yeah. All right, fine. I'll allow it. So let's come on now to our second major theory. That the boys didn't die in the tower at all. They survived. Or at least, that's what amateur researcher Philippa Gregory... No, Philippa Langley will tell you. Does the name ring a bell? Well, Langley was famously the woman who got a hunch that Richard III's remains were lurking under a car park in Leicester. And it turned out to be true, and they were indeed found there in 2012. Who is this woman? Who is this woman? I'll tell you. They even made a film with Sally Hawkins playing her role. It's called The Lost King. And actually, it ran into quite a lot of legal trouble of its own. And they were successfully sued by libel by academics at the University of Leicester who objected to their portrayal in the film.
Fucking hell, can't take a joke. Jesus.
But that's
how bad can it have been?
I haven't watched it, but I assume maybe it's along the lines of, like, nobody believes Philippa Langley. And they're like, you crazy old witch. And they're like, we believed her. We were fucking dug there. I reckon it's like they've made them look like they just were like, you know, telling her to fuck off or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If you've watched it, let us know. Because I'm never going to watch that. As a proud Ricardian, historians dedicated to redeeming old Dick's spotted legacy and proving he wasn't such a bad guy after all, Langley launched a huge research mission called the Missing Princess Project. The project's sole aim was to prove that the commonly held story of big bad Uncle Richard killing his nephews in the tower was really just Tudor propaganda, designed to smear the last Yorkist king. A perfect example of history being written by the victors. And rather than killing the boys, Richard was nice enough to let them go.
The major sources supporting this theory are tied to two famous pretenders to the crown in 1474 and 1494, respectively, Lambert Simnel and Perkin Warbeck. While conventional wisdom says that they were just imposters posing as the lost princes, Langley reckons that they were in fact the real McCoy, back for another go at getting their disinherited mums on the English throne. In 1487, just a few short years after the princes vanished, a coronation was held at a church in Dublin, Ireland, for a lad who was going around calling himself Edward V. Now 16 and ready to rule, he'd made friends in high places across Europe, including the Holy Roman Emperor Maximilian and his wife, Margaret of Burgundy. And this was a biggie because Margaret was the sister of Edward and Richard of York, making her his aunt. Auntie and uncle were clearly on board with Edward's bid to reclaim his lost kingdom. Langley's team found an accounting receipt where Maximilian ordered 400 longpikes for an invasion, naming a son of King Edward who was expelled from his dominion. Langley makes a lot of the fact that Margaret of Burgundy appeared to publicly recognise and acknowledge this person as her nephew. But let's just think about that for a second. Margaret famously detested King Henry VII, the man who took her late brother's crown. Historian Dr. Elizabeth Norton describes her as the last remaining Yorkist in an independent and prominent position who would absolutely work towards usurping him. So the fact that she gave money and military support to a guy who said he was her nephew doesn't necessarily mean she believed him. She just kind of wanted everyone to think that's who he was, so she could be like, that's the real reason I'm doing it. Justice and equality. I do think, though, as I said, I am not a Ricardian. Had he lived to reign longer than 2 years, he would have had time to write his own story rather than having it written for him, and possibly would be remembered more fondly. But he didn't, so we don't.
No. So whoever this guy was who was saying he was Edward V, this so-called king stormed into battle against Henry VII's forces at the Battle of Stoke in June 1487. It would become known as the last ever battle of the War of the Roses. And once again, the Yorkists lost miserably. As a disorganised hodgepodge of paid European mercenaries, they were utterly trounced by the Tudor defenders and left like arrow-pricked hedgehogs in the dirt. The story from there goes that the guy claiming to be Edward was unmasked as a 10-year-old commoner called Lambert Simnel. After his capture, Henry VII sent him to work in the royal kitchens as punishment.
Don't send him into the palace. That seems like a real rookie error.
Yeah. But according to Langley, this was just a bit of fiction. According to the Missing Princess Project, Henry VII tried to neutralise what had actually been a very legitimate threat by brushing it off as a tweenage poser. The real Edward V most likely died at the Battle of Stoke, and the Tudor king covered up just how close a call it had been to protect his shaky rule. And I guess it sends this message, right, of like, I don't even need to execute you.
Mm-hmm.
You are such a pretender to the throne. I can put you in my own kitchens, like the peasant you are.
And history would repeat itself in 1494. When Richard came back on the scene. Now 20, he went around royal European houses trying to raise cash to build an army. Once again, calling on Aunt Margaret and her husband Maximilian in France. Maximilian's court supposedly judged Richard to be legit after verifying several marks on his body, his eye, mouth and thigh, and apparently only the youngest prince had those in the whole world. In 1495... this Richard and his army of paid soldiers launched an invasion on England by boat. But when it failed, he fled to Scotland and took refuge with King James IV. Chilled there for a bit, got married, and just kicked about until Henry VII's spies captured him and marched him down to London in 1497. Henry had him sign a pre-prepared confession that revealed his true identity was just some guy, Perkin Warbeck, the son of a boatman from Flanders. In exchange for the confession, the so-called traitor got off quite lightly. He wasn't locked up, he was allowed to live with his wife, and had his own tailor and horse. Apparently, Henry didn't want to piss off his European neighbours, who were convinced that if he killed this guy, he would be killing his own brother-in-law. We're not sure whether Elizabeth recognised her long-lost little brother, but in the eyes of those at court, this was a certified imposter who had luckily escaped with his life. Until he got caught trying to escape London, a few months later, presumably on the horse they gave him. And this time, Henry wasn't feeling quite so charitable. And the man known as Perkin Warbeck was ironically held at the Tower of London, brutally tortured, and executed by hanging in 1499.
And from there, the mystery of the princes in the tower became ancient history. Researchers battled around more half-baked theories, like a potential plot by Richard's friend-turned-enemy, the Duke of Buckinghamshire, but nothing really stuck. Until 2012, when Richard III's bones were dug up from a Leicester City Council car park and blew this extremely cold case wide open. Because it wasn't just an exciting day for the council staff, who presumably got the afternoon off work. It also gave historians a full genetic profile that could be potentially used to identify the bones attributed to his nephews. But before you get too excited, for that to happen, scientists would need royal permission. Queen Elizabeth II never approved of having the bones retested, believing it was better to leave the boys, whoever they were, to rest in peace.
Yeah, yeah.
But rumour has it that King Charles III doesn't share his late mum's views. So one day, we might finally get the answers about the bones lying in Westminster Abbey. If it is them, well, Philippa Langley might have to go live in New Zealand or something. But if it's not, well, all bets are well and truly off.
I don't care.
I think it's them. I think it's them.
I believe they were killed in the tower. I just don't think that the bones are theirs.
Oh, okay, okay.
I think they were put there prove Thomas More's account.
Sure. Okay, got it. I see what you're saying.
I believe it was Richard III that killed them.
Yeah.
But I don't think he did anything differently than any other duke of any other county would have done in his shoes.
No. He's villainized to an extent that I'm like, they were all doing the same thing.
Totally.
And anyone would have done the same thing.
So I absolutely believe that someone was just like,
kill him.
I'm just going to put this box just right here
in
exactly this place.
Yes.
And then it will be mysteriously discovered.
You'd be pissed that 200 years no one went and checked. But anyway, guys, that is your shorthand on the princes in the tower. We hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you later for another shorthand. Goodbye.
Bye.